You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News, and today we are continuing on with the player season recap series. I got Doug McDermott today. I'm really psyched to do that. We're doing veteran wings this week. So Adam's got Justin Holiday coming up later this week. If you're interested in all the latest news on the coaching carousel or Victor Oladipo's comments last week or the reporting around his future, we covered all that on yesterday's episode and two episodes last week. So go back and check those out. But today's all about Doug McDermott because we got to recap all these players and see what it means going forward. And looking back at the season and real basketball games to me is fun in a way that looking at hypothetical Oladipo trades and who the coach could be is not. So I'm really excited to dig into, not fun is the wrong word, less fun than looking at actual basketball games. Doug McDermott, best season of his career this year. And really, who would have thought having your shooter shoot more threes would make him the best that he's been in his career? And the way I've been doing these player season recaps is kind of like a statistical look at their season and then a skill-based look at their season, combining those two things and say what it means for the player going forward. I mean, so last week with Goga, there was a lot of stats to look at, right? He's kind of a multifaceted player. With McDermott, there's only one stat I want to look at, and that is three-point attempts per possession, or per 100 possessions, I guess. Took 10.4 threes per 100 possessions this year. That is easily his career high, right? His highest before this was actually last year, but prior to the Pacers, it hovered around seven, high sixes with the Bulls, 7.5 with the Pacers last year, and then over 10 this year. Look at that. You get your shooter lots of three-point shots, and he is suddenly way more dynamic and more effective and can use some of his more ancillary skills more often. And the volume was great, right? 4.3 per game does not sound like much, and it's really not. I'll get into that later in the segment, but combining that with that 43.5% that he hit, which also was a career best, just barely escaping two seasons ago and four seasons ago, which if McDermott's and every other year player were up for a down year next year, only about 40%. But anyway, combining those things turned him into a whole new beast because, I mean, he was signed to be a shooter, right? The whole thing that Adam was saying the other day was the Pacers wanted him or Joe Harris and sent the deal out, whichever one took it can have the roster spot. They just wanted a shooter. And finally, year one with him, the bench, Corey Joseph, Tyreek Evans, and Sabonis was with that unit, but Sabonis had not evolved as a passer yet as a sophomore. No one could get him the damn ball. And when he played with the starters, right, Vic was hurt, Bojan couldn't pass. We've talked about Collison's limitation as a passer. Year one, McDermott with the Pacers, obviously they needed to make more of an effort to get him threes, and that's on McMillan. But the combination of them focusing more on getting him those threes and having the right guys between Sabonis' improvement as a passer and TJ McConnell now being a part of that second unit instead of Corey Joseph and just general better creators and high IQ guys with that group, just he took off. And, his rebounding, whatever, about a career best, assist numbers, whatever, about a career best, that's kind of in line with him just playing the most minutes of his career, right? None of his stats in other areas fluctuated dramatically in any direction on a per-minute basis to make me go, oh, he's a much better at this or that than he was in past years. Maybe a tiny bit rebounding, but not really. But really, the shooting is what took off, and I think that is why you saw him play a lot more, why he became so much more integral to the team, why, right, the game they won in Denver, he closed the game. And that's only, that's game sticks out because it was so memorable and such a big Pacers win this season. But there were a few games that he closed because he has a skill set that allows him to close games. That did not seem imaginable. I mean, we were calling his contract bad after the first year with the team. So really a combination of McMillan and the front office going, Like they didn't really shoot more threes as a team. I mean, they just got more shooters. But they actually made McDermott is a rare exception from the McMillan era where they made an effort to get him more three-pointers. And lo and behold, he really took off. And credit also to the lineup that he was with. And that really paid off in terms of impact stats. If they're your fancy, right, offensive box plus minus, is an all-in-one stat that's supposed to measure offensive impact. McDermott's been a negative every year of his career. Until this year, he was plus 1.4. Defense took a little bit of a step back, and that's kind of a stat to mention here. Minus 1.3 in that defensive box plus minus. And I think some of that is we rattled off that, you know, a lot of the guys he played with are better offensive players, better passers. You know, it's hard. He is a weak defender. He's okay, I guess, at battling in the post and understands what's supposed to happen, but he's really unathletic and slow-footed, right? So when he's with a weaker defensive unit, Justin Holliday can defend, but in general, they took a step back from the Corey Joseph team to me with their bench defense, that he kind of, in turn, looked more out of place. He's recovering more often. That's not ideal for Doug McDermott, but it doesn't matter as much because this was, you know, his total impact is also the highest this year because his offense was so good. 62% true shooting. He was just a flamethrower, and I'm going to get into how that really impacted his other skills, but I really can't credit enough about his three-point shooting stats and how impressive they were this year and how important that could be going forward, right? He's on an expiring deal, but his shooting is super important for this team next year. I'll talk about that coming up, and I think that those are the biggest stats I wanted to highlight. His low turnovers, 6.8% turnover, that's really good. I actually gave Corey Joseph a lot of credit in the past for all his limitations as a player. He barely turned the ball over. Doug McDermott never touches the ball to dribble. Actually, he did dribble a little more this year, but he did a nice job not turning the ball over. The playoffs is a whole different thing, though, and this is where McDermott has struggled his whole career, right? His career high playoff points per game in 13 minutes is 5 with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Shot over 50% from 3 that series. With the Pacers, he's taken 17 playoff threes and made 2 of them. And like I just said, his defense is pretty weak, especially with the unit he's with now. And because he's not a good self-creator, he needs to be set up. They just can't play him, right? They benched him in Game 4 against the Celtics 2 years ago. He was barely in the rotation by the end of this series this year. That's why I think focusing on one stat actually tells the story of his season pretty well, because you take away the one thing, which... And the Heat didn't, like, totally take it away. He got up, you know, not a ton of threes a game, only 2.5. He played way less minutes, though. He played about 60% of the minutes he did in the regular season. So similar, right, three-point attempt per possession numbers right, 10.4 per 100 possessions in the regular season, 9.2 in the playoffs. So they did a little bit of a job limiting his threes, but not really. The Heat... that he just couldn't make them, and that makes him so much less effective. And that's why I think it's focusing on one stat with him is so important, right? If he can hit these threes, suddenly he can play 15 minutes and not get you killed, which rejuvenates TJ Warren or Justin Holliday, and it makes your bench way better. And I don't think it's a coincidence that they've been swept 2 years in a row with him totally struggling, right? He's a big part of that. He is a decent member of the rotation, plays about 20 minutes a game, a little under that in the regular season. They just totally lose that. He becomes a zero in the postseason. So it's night and day for him between regular season and playoffs. And eventually the playoffs are going to have to come around because the shooting was there for him in his first two postseasons, one with the Bulls and one with the Thunder. So if the shooting could come around, he could be much more useful. But that has not happened yet. So I got to talk about some skills, and I got to blend some fun stats with some of the McDermott skills that he showed off this season as part of his improvement. But first, I got two groups of people I want to talk to you about. The first one, a common friend of the pod, the people over at Rock Auto, because one reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you can then use on other important things like food or your mortgage or anything, really. Why would you choose to spend more for the exact same auto parts in a chain store that you can get for cheaper at rockauto.com? They have a bunch of auto parts, and they're a family business serving auto parts customers online for over 20 years. Go to rockauto.com right now to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Their catalog is unique, super easy to navigate. They have basically any part you could need for your car and brand and specifications that you can prefer. Best of all, again, price is always reliably low, no matter what level of knowledge you have about your car. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now. See everything available for your car or truck, right? Locked On. And their How Did You Hear About Us box, I know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. And the other people I got to talk to you about, I would say Built Bar here, but they have evolved and sent a new product that is also awesome that I need to tell you about. And it's been really helpful for me. It's it's protein gels, and Built Go is what it's called, and it makes you better at whatever you do. Break through your wall. For me, I am currently training for a 5K with my family, and these things have been helpful for me to keep my energy up both during the day and during training runs. And they're really small. They're these 1.5 ounce gel pouches that you can put, you know, in your pocket even, or in your bag just as you're moving. And they're good for, you know, there are suggestions you could put it in your golf bag. You could just put it in your briefcase, right? But really, it's just the best workout gel on the market. 5-hour energy without the crash feeling. It's great. It's like drinking a Monster with a third of the caffeine and better results. They have delicious flavors. My favorite is the coconut chocolate, but also the chocolate mint's really good. It combines energy gel with protein in a way that just gets your system moving and is awesome. So go to builtgo.com. Use the promo code LOCKED, just LOCKED, one word. You'll get $30 off your next order. That's the promo code LOCKED for $30 off at builtgo.com. Let's go. So McDermott shot more threes and made more threes. That's the short story of his statistical season. But that's not a good summation of what made him a lot better as an offensive player with that impact I talked about last segment. Because, as me and Adam mentioned many times, something they were missing with him in the bubble that while he was really struggling to end the season and in the playoffs is he wasn't playing with Sabonis. And that is so productive and boring because, right, playing with one guy should not be a prop for your entire skill set. But for Sabonis, 24% of his assists went to McDermott, right? That's almost a fourth of his assists, 74 out of 310. That went to one guy. And that seems crazy because that one guy only played like under 20 minutes a game. So the fact that Sabonis, a high assist guy who plays with all sorts of second units and starting fives and with another center, without another center, sometimes isn't the focal point, sometimes is. The fact that he was such a heavy passer to one guy is so crazy to me. And their two-man game was so good, and we knew it all year. And by the way, no one assisted McDermott more than Sabonis. Sabonis and McConnell both tied for 74 assists to McDermott. And then no one else had more than like 25, 20-ish Justin Holiday range. So really, that two-man game took off. And that's where you could see how McDermott's shooting helped him in other facets of the game. Because, you know, his passing, again, his assist numbers weren't like a career high or anything. It was 1.1 per game. He averaged that in Dallas. He had won a game two seasons ago. He had won a game in Chicago for a year. He wasn't like passing more, but with that two-man game, all of a sudden you can see McDermott dribbling and taking it to the rim. You could see him throwing it to Sabonis in a pick and roll. You even saw him every once in a while just throw it over to the man in the slot for an easy three, right? Those are things that, because teams are so afraid of him shooting and Sabonis rolling, and at the same time, those two just have brilliant timing and cadence to their two-man actions. All of a sudden, it's like, wow, there's an opening almost every time they go to this just fake handoff, whatever it is. And that was so impressive to me in McDermott's evolution. And most of it was, again, a result of the way he was defended because he was hitting all these threes, but is that he was able to just show off skills that we had in a Pacers uniform not seen from him before, right? I think in his first year with – actually, I can just look. I didn't want to get too statsy here, but in his first year with the Pacers, he actually shot a higher number of attempts at the rim, which just seems crazy to me as a percentage of his shots, but that's because his three-point attempt rate was so crazy. But basically, he cut down all mid-rangers, and three-point attempt rate went way up, and his at the rim went down by 0.1%, so just a little bit. But finished super well, 68% this year, because – he was able to leverage his three-point shooting into that two-man game with Sabonis to get to the rim, to get these finishes, which I thought was so impressive. And a really big part of why the Pacers' second unit was so good. And then off-the-bounce stuff was just not something we saw from him at all in his first unit with the Pacers, right? I don't know if I ever saw him or can remember, right, in a Tyreke Evans-infused unit, Doug McDermott dribbling to get to the rim or create a shot outside of, you know, like at the end of a shot clock or something, where this year that was like a common thing. So that was one thing. The other thing I just said is the passing. It's so minor. He's not a good passer at all. In fact, it's mostly tunnel vision passes, but just the timing with Sabonis and the way that it draws other teams in because he can shoot, being able to just flip it over to the side and get it to someone, something that I never expected to see from him. So to see McDermott evolve in a way like that, where he took a shooting and said, you know what, I don't want this to just be shooting. I'm going to – and it's the coaching staff just created here too. I'm going to use this to get other good shots or other good plays for my team was really a big part of why the bench was so good, right? Justin Holiday was an amazing shooter too. I just bonked my mic with my hat. Sorry about that. Was an amazing shooter too. But, you know, he didn't have the Doug McDermott level gravity to suck guys all the way out to the perimeter. And McDermott used that to drive to create points. And I really thought that was the biggest evolution in his game this year, because we knew he could shoot, right? Him just simply shooting more and making more. Obviously, that's the story of his season and the reason he, again, was so effective. But to be able to use that and immediately turn around and go, okay, how can I use that to create points elsewhere was so impressive to me. And that rim finishing was just a fantastic part of it. Now, the trouble with McDermott is on defense, a step back is the wrong word. And I talked about how in the context of the bench, and maybe I am giving the bench this year not enough credit for their defense, right? It was good, and that maybe I'm giving last year's too much credit. I still think last year's was a tad bit better of a bench defense, but it felt like, and maybe this is just a consequence of Justin Holiday guarding a different set of players than McDermott's used to, but it felt like he was picked on defense more often, and maybe that hurt his defensive impact. And some of that could be that some of the guys are decent individual defenders between Justin Holiday, McConnell, and stuff. So they go, okay, let's just go right at McDermott. And if in the playoffs, the Heat did this all the time. You know, McDermott's in the game, they're targeting him in pick and rolls. And it felt like he actually got a hair worse at this kind of stuff, right? The quick defending in space or recoveries or knowing where to be, the angles. Most other guys who have put on a Pacers uniform have at some point gotten better on defense appreciably. You know, even if it's Bojan Bogdanović going from like a bottom five defender in the NBA to below average but like capable, right? I remember specifically thinking with Bojan, with his evolution, he did a great job guarding DeRozan sometimes because he got better at defending laterally, or excuse me, the opposite of laterally. He got better at defending straight up and down players. Lateral guys would still kill him, but you know that kind of stuff he was better at. McDermott is a rare exception in this Pacers era. Are in the McMillan era, basically, that hasn't really, to me, improved much on D since joining the team, which is super rare and kind of unfathomable. And I think that is where, you know, if he wants to add to his skill improvement from last year, right? Because being able to have Sabonis is still on the team, and there's going to be link-ups between those two guys all the time. They've got each other down. If he can defend even a little bit, one position, right? Just pick the worst offensive player on the other team, slap McDermott on him. If McDermott can contain that guy and like slow down the pick and roll enough that they can send help in time, then all of a sudden he can play like 25 minutes a game. And if you can shoot the way he can, that's super helpful. So I really think that evolution is important for him because, you know, even as a screener and a cutter, he's really good. Screening, not so much, but like I'm talking just in general. The two or three possessions that he is tasked with setting a screen and ghosting, right? Because he can shoot so well, it still opens up space. Great cutter. We've talked about the shooting in the two-man game and the finishing ad nauseum in this segment. He's got enough offensive ability to create. This is the wrong word for it, but I wrote about this before. To be a creator, basically, right? He's creating with his space and his gravity. He's making life, right? We consider a creator someone who can generate a shot for his teammates by you know, making stuff easier by them by manipulating the defense and setting up a pass or creating a shot for himself. McDermott does it without the ball. He just has the gravity to create, quote-unquote, a shot. But that's unconventionally the way to say it. Right, but all that stuff is great and is part of why the bench was so good this year. He's just got to pair it with the defense going forward. And I think there are ways that he could be used better on D, but I digress. I want to talk about his role going forward because I have talked for a long time about Doug McDermott, so I'm going to take a small break and talk about what comes next given this season for McDermott. So I've never said this before, and I was formulating this thought before the show. So what you're about to hear is kind of me thinking out loud, but also me just thinking about Doug McDermott's future. So we know the following things to be potentially true. One is that the Pacers are potentially going to move on from Miles Turner this offseason, right? And start Sabonis, totally shake up the rotation, ditch the two-center experiment. The other thing we know, and this one we do know, is that they played really well with one center on the court, whether that was in the bubble with T.J. Warren predominantly the four, or their bench units, which had Justin Holiday predominantly the four, or on occasion McDermott at the four, right? Closing games in Denver, something I brought up. Is there a scenario, and I don't know this, but you listener, think about it for a second. Is there a scenario where McDermott starts next year at the four, right? What if the starting five is, you know, Brogdon, Depot, Warren, McDermott, Sabonis, and then whatever Turner is traded for is like a key bench player and a good pick or something? Or Oladipo is also traded, and then, you know, the aggregate of what you receive, maybe by pairing Oladipo and Turner, is your fourth starter, and McDermott becomes your fifth starter, because, one, adding shooting in with a good group like that creates space for Brogdon and Warren to do their thing, and two, you are now pairing him with Sabonis for more minutes, which makes McDermott more effective and allows Sabonis to do the things he does the best. So I actually think that that's not a crazy idea. Now, understood that that impacts your bench a ton because, you know, when I talk about the second unit, the McConnell, McDermott, Justin Holiday group, McDermott's a key part of that. And I'm pretty sure when researching that unit for bubble writing purposes, their net ratings didn't totally tank, but it got a lot worse when McDermott out of the game. So, you know, maybe you're impacting that group and you need another guy there. And Jeremy Lamb can be helpful to that offensive group. Also, they're not going to have Sabonis next year. So maybe pulling him out of that group isn't the move. But I don't think it's ridiculous that, you know, there's a way McDermott is that power forward starter in the next iteration of small ball Pacers. But that's not what this segment's about. Going forward for McDermott, what comes next is the defensive evolution. And when it does, I think that just cements him into more units for this team. And maybe that's not as a starter. Like I just said, that's a stretch. But if it means he can close two extra games a year, or it means you can throw him in one extra situation that you couldn't because he gets a little bit better on D. And he's 28. He's about to turn 29. Or he might already, yeah, he turns 29 early January next year. So probably before the start of next season. It's unlikely that he becomes appreciably better on defense or really at anything. It's just getting a little bit better with his teammates and things like that that could go such a long way. And I think as McDermott is 29, right, I don't expect him to improve much. If his role doesn't change, all we're going to see from him next year, I think, is just like this year, getting a little bit better at the things he's already good at. He got better as a shooter, he finished well, and he kind of, you know, at Creighton, obviously, he was more of a self-creator, so we've seen him be the guy who can do stuff at the rim and in the mid-range, but just sharpening the iron of his offensive game and maybe his defensive game a little more would go such a long way, especially in the postseason where he's just been so useless, right? If he can just hit a third of three threes in the postseason every game, all of a sudden he can play so much more, and that's such a low bar for such an elite shooter. So really his future is really easy to project to me. You know, I mused about the starting lineup stuff, but I think he's just going to have the same role again, right? He's going to be at 20 minutes, 17 to 20 minutes every night, who, if he's really feeling it, he'll play a ton, and the Pacers will probably win that game because when he's feeling it, I mean, that means Sabonis is playing well, that means he's playing well, and the Pacers' offense is clicking. And if he's not feeling it, then if someone else is, great, and if someone else isn't, all of a sudden you got to lean on his charges a little more. But they've won games with him not feeling it before, so I imagine we'll see, you know, the same guy who does this. I think we'll see the same stuff we saw year one to year two, right? Little refinements that go a long way. I think that is certainly possible for him next year. And now it's also possible that he is the exact same player next year, right? Again, he's 29. That's not a bad thing. He's good. He just, if he doesn't turn it up in the playoffs, I don't know if you think to re-sign him after 3 years of him just being useless for you, but I think if he can make little refinements and be useful, maybe they look to bring him back just as a shooter, and clearly good locker room guy, good chemistry with his teammates, and a great offensive player, so I think his future is going to be interesting. But that is a good place to end here, the McDermott season preview. I had a good time talking about Dougie McBuckets. He was one of the later – me and Adam draft the like the players we want to do for these. I picked a Doug pretty late, but I'm glad I got to do it. It was fun. And sometimes when I talk about McDermott, I think about maybe he's a little more integral to the team than I give him credit for, right? He plays under 20 minutes a game, but you know the way he helps elevate Sabonis in that second unit, and when he's on, he's just killer. Maybe there is a scenario where he should play more, but he's so limited that I get why he doesn't, and he probably shouldn't. So that was just some off-the-cuff thoughts at the end there, but thank you guys so much for listening. Again, we'll have Justin Holiday season recap stuff coming up, and one extra episode this week that we haven't figured out what we're going to talk about yet, so stick around for that stuff. We will see you guys tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Please leave us ratings and comments on iTunes, and we will see you soon.